Our speaker today is the Reverend Meg Roberts, who has spoken to us a couple of times in the past. Reverend Meg is the quarter-time consulting minister from Comox Valley Unitarian Fellowship. She lives in Vancouver and is a guest speaker and workshop leader in congregations around BC. Meg also does spirit arts workshops, using creativity and the arts in spiritual exploration. Meg is in Victoria offering two workshops on writing homilies, one yesterday and a second workshop tomorrow here in the sanctuary from 9:30 to 3:30. I believe there's room for a few more people, so contact Anna Isaacs for more information if you feel you might have a story or a homily waiting to be given shape. I can give you Anna's contact information after the service, and we hope lots of interesting homilies will be the result of these workshops. Meg is fresh from performing in Vancouver's Theatre for Living's main stage production, Shwa'amit, or Home, which looked at reconciliation in human terms between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people on this land. Some of you may have watched this on webcast last Saturday evening. I did, and it was absolutely amazing. So, welcome, Meg. Come in. Come in to this place which we make holy by our presence. Come in with all your vulnerabilities and strengths, fears and anxieties, loves and hopes. For here you need not hide, nor pretend, nor be anything other than who you are and who you are called to be.
Come into this place where we can touch and be touched, heal and be healed, forgive and be forgiven. Come into this place where the ordinary is sanctified, the human is celebrated, the compassionate is expected. Come into this place, together we make it a holy place.
Our chalice this morning was lit by the Caldy family. Members of the Caldy family are here today. This is Summer, Rania, and we have Adam, Serena, and Mimi. They are a Syrian Unitarian Universalist family now living on Salt Spring Island, where they're members of the Salt Spring Island Fellowship. We welcome you and your children, both of you. In celebration and warmth of this congregation, we thank you for lighting our chalice, the symbol of our faith.
I would love to have some company up here in this beautiful quilt. Anyone that's feeling young at heart or in body, come and join. I'm going to stand here so you don't get my back. So you got the sun. I guess you must be enjoying that extra vitamin D up there. Okay. So I have a story that I want to tell called The Haircut. How many people have gotten haircuts in the last 2 weeks? All right. Well, this is a little different. When I was in grade 3, I was 8 years old, and I'd made a new friend. We'll call her Shirley. No offense meant to any Shirleys in the room. Now, we were getting to know one another, and I really wanted her to like me. Now, Shirley didn't get along with all the young girls in the class, and most of them were my friends. So one day at lunchtime, we were out in the schoolyard, and Shirley nudges me. She said, "Do you see Darla? She's got a new haircut. She looks like a monkey." So I looked over at Darla, and her blonde hair was shining in the sun. She had what we called a pageboy haircut that's like this. And just when I looked over at her, she looked over at me and smiled and walked over. She said, "Do you see my new haircut?" And I said, "Yes." And I glanced at Shirley. "You look like a monkey." Now, Darla's face went from being happy to sad. Oh, so sad. I realized what a mistake I'd made. I'd wanted Shirley to like me so much that I didn't even think about what I said before I opened my mouth. I didn't think about what Darla would feel like. I didn't even think about what it meant to not think for myself and just say somebody else's words. Now, Darla was about to walk away from me, and I quickly thought and said, wait, Darla, I didn't mean a furry monkey. I meant, you know, like one of the monkeys. Now, some of these people know what I'm talking about, but not everybody. So when I was 8, there was a young guy group that was a band. They called themselves the Monkees. They were kind of a parody of a British rock band. They had a show on TV, and I loved it. And so for those of you who know the chorus, join in. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. You can tell I'm an alto. Oh, those monkeys, Darla said. She started to smile. Well, that's okay. That's cool, I said. Now, at that point, Shirley just looked at me and made a mad face and walked away. That was the end of that friendship. And I didn't mind because I stayed friends with Darla. Now, together with the adults, I'm going to be talking about the idea of reconciliation. So what does that mean? It means when one person or one group of people hurts somebody else, and they have to take responsibility for it. And if it doesn't hurt the other people, to make amends and see if they can rebuild that relationship. Now, in this case, I'm talking about Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. And there's many things that non-Indigenous people have learned over the hundreds of years of being here, are things that we figured out that maybe we didn't do, not maybe, we did not do right. And it's time for us to want to make changes so that, we can see if the healing those relationships is possible. Now, as a kid, I was lucky that I could repair that relationship with Darla. One of the things that I learned is that I don't just say what somebody else thinks. I think for myself. And I think with my heart and think about how it might hurt somebody else. What do you think when Darla walked up to me, what do you think I could have said instead of, you know, oh, not the you're not a furry monkey, you're one of the monkeys. What could I actually have said instead? Any ideas? You like the monkey band. I could have said that. Do you have an idea? I could have just said, I'm sorry. I didn't think before I opened my mouth. That's not really what I think. Any other ideas? Yeah. Thank you. You got one.
I think monkeys are cute.
I've never thought of that. Thank you. I could have said, and it's true, I love monkeys. There's so many things about being human together that sometimes we make mistakes. And I have to take that responsibility. So I hope you'll learn from my mistake and learn to bring your heart and compassion to being together in this circle of life. Thanks for being good listeners and good thinkers.
And now I have some reflections on the topic of reconciliation, including an incident from years ago that I wish I had the opportunity to reconcile. I was working for the Vancouver School Board and was taking a course organized by a Native education consultant. The purpose of the course was to learn an assessment model more valid or more fair for Indigenous students and other students from varying cultural backgrounds, such as English as a second language or refugee students. During a break, I was part of a conversation in which the consultant alluded to her time in residential schools. This was the early 90s, and few of us had a true understanding of what went on in those schools. Unthinking, I blurted out into the conversation that I'd always wanted to go to boarding school like my dad and his family. way more fun than living a boring, restrictive old home with grumpy parents. Well, there was dead silence. A different concept entirely. And now that I know better, I often wish that I could tell this lovely consultant that I now understand the difference. Having done contract work at band schools on a couple of First Nations, I should have known better, or at least been more sensitive. Having worked in inner city Vancouver schools with the children of residential school survivors and seen the trauma associated with the word school by those parents, I should have known better. But I did learn. A couple of things I learned. Instead of asking Indigenous parents to come into a large, imposing, 100-year-old brick building, likely terrifying, to discuss their children's educational needs, I asked if I could come to their home and bring the coffee. And I learned I always stressed the strengths of the parents as well as their children. Last February, Reverend Melora asked us all to consider what we would personally do in order to prepare ourselves for reconciliation with the Indigenous peoples on whose land we live. She asked us to write our plans on colorful flames. Perhaps some of you were here that day and remember. My personal reconciliation plan includes listening attentively to Rosanna Deerchild on Unreserved on CBC Radio 1 and reading everything that Richard Wagamese has written and hanging on the words of Thomas King, Eden Robinson, Wab Kanu, Janet Rogers, and so many more, and Joseph Boyden, too. Richard Wagamese, who we lost a week ago, saw the stories of Indigenous writers as bringing genuine light to the Canadian conscience. By living with these stories, my hope is to increase the depth of my understanding, sensitivity, and empathy for them. And perhaps I'll eventually learn to listen more attentively and consider the other's point of view before I jump into a conversation.
I was sitting in a circle of 40 people. It was in a tent on the Peony grounds in Vancouver in a warm September day in 2013. We were introducing ourselves, saying who we are and where we are from, as part of a Reconciliation Canada workshop that was in the Time Together and the Truth and Healing, Truth and Reconciliation Commission's national event. We were two-thirds away round the circle when an Indigenous man talked about what had happened to him in the residential schools. How ashamed he'd felt that the abuse he'd experienced, he had passed on to his children. To deal with the pain, he turned to drugs. He had to hit bottom, he said, before he could then start to recover and find out who he really is. His culture, his language, his spiritual practices helped him. His courage and his willingness to be vulnerable moved me. As we went along around the last part of the circle, I see a white man come into the tent wearing a clerical collar. And I became aware of something happening behind me in the circle. When the introductions were done, the facilitator said that the Indigenous man had asked if the priest was willing to come into the center of the circle with him to stand in for another priest. And that man had agreed. The Indigenous man said to the priest, "I know the abuse, and I need to forgive you so I can heal. So I forgive you." And that priest who was standing in received that and held the space with him so that the man could do what he needed to do to heal. my heart cracked open. Would I have the courage as a clergy person to stand there? Whether the person raged at me, or cried, or asked to be forgiven. Reconciliation is a complicated thing. The journey towards healing, and we hope reconciliation between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, calls to all of us now. It's about our shared history. The colonization of this land continues to infect our present and warp our future that we want so much to have for our children and our grandchildren. As a Euro-Canadian, how do I engage in that journey so that it can be true and honorable? Now, for anyone not familiar with this history, I want to just give you a few brief snapshots. Indigenous peoples have been living as nations since time immemorial. They had their languages and cultures, their governance and ways of economy. Europeans came to colonize the land. Colonization is an intentional, systemic plan to assimilate Indigenous people into a European way of living in order to control those lands and the resources. Although there were some early treaties in various parts of the land, not all, some of them are still being created here in BC, the agreements were not honored by the Europeans in power, and eventually Indigenous people were forced onto reserves. In an ill-conceived move, the government set up residential schools. They had to go there or their parents would be jailed. The purpose of the schools was to get the children away from their families and communities, to kill the culture they were raised in, and instill in them that Eurocentric worldview and a religion that the government deemed superior to the children's spiritual traditions. For over 100 years, at least 150,000 Indigenous children went through this residential school system. The schools were the policy of the federal government and run by the Roman Catholic Church, United Church, and Anglican Church, as well as churches that that were part of what eventually became the United Church. Children experience terrible physical, emotional, and often sexual abuse. Not all children experience the same extreme abuse. Some children reported to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that they had some positive experiences, learning about music and sports and finding friends. But all experienced the trauma of being torn from families and deprived of their culture, language, spiritual traditions, and communities. The last residential school closed in 1996. In 2005, former residential school survivors or warriors took the federal government and the churches to court, leading to the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement, which was the largest class action suit in Canadian history. Aside from providing some very basic compensation to students, survivors asked that the agreement include the establishment of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. They gathered statements and did research, resulting in a significant report delivered in 2015 and 94 calls to action. Some churches apologized to survivors, beginning with the first apology in 1986, and some have come after. Some have yet to apologize. The federal government offered an official apology to survivors in 2008. But apologies and recommended actions are only as good as the changes that come about as a result. The impact of the residential schools, of course, as so many of you know, was immense. It happened to seven generations of Indigenous communities. It will take more than a few generations to heal. Cycles of abuse and addiction and dysfunction continue through generations by some people, begun by, of course, the abuses done to them through the residential schools and other tools of colonization, such as the Indian Act. There are more Indigenous children now in care than ever went to residential schools. There's a high percentage of Indigenous people in prison. The rate of suicide amongst Indigenous youth far exceeds that rate for non-Indigenous youth, and the rate of poverty in Indigenous communities is disproportionate to the rest of Canada. And there is also strength, resilience, and success for various Indigenous people and communities. Many things can be learned, of course, from Indigenous cultures and ways of relating to the land and all that lives from it. As a non-Indigenous person, where do I begin engaging my part in the process of reconciliation? I think I start with locating myself in my cultural background and knowing who I am. My family's cultural background is half British, quarter Welsh, eighth Swedish, and eighth Norwegian. Now, because Britain was the dominant culture in the development of this country that some of us call Canada, I've swum in the water of that kind of culture and seen myself reflected so that I don't even recognize that it is not the only way. There are many ways of being in this world. I need to reconsider my family history in light of what I'm learning. Now, my grandparents were settlers that farmed the land on the prairies on what came to eventually be known as Saskatchewan. I remember a story that my mom told me when I was a little girl. Now, my grandfather knew some Cree men who would stop when they were out hunting. And I remember she said her dad let the men fish in his creek. Of course, recently thinking about it, I recognized it wasn't his creek at all. He was on their traditional territory. I saw a film I recommend to you called The Pass System that describes how people on the reserves had to apply for a pass to even fish or hunt for their families, visit their relatives on other reserves. Watching the film at the Comox Film Festival, tears rolled down my face as I recognized how little I know and how much I need to relearn the history that I had been taught, rethink my understanding of the Canada I used to be so proud of, and recognize we have things we need to change to feel like we can be who we want to be. I grew up in Saskatoon in the 1960s and 70s. How many people here are from the prairies? Oh, yes. Forget about wheat being the main export. It's people, I think. I remember sitting in our living room, and I will admit I loved Roy Rogers movies. The cowboy movies and their false stereotypes. When I think of it now, it's so horribly laughable. And yet it's not. It's painfully imprinted myself and many generations to think that that's what Indigenous people are. So how do I recognize the stereotypes? How do I relearn what it means to be Indigenous and all the different nations and their ways of being? I remember in grade 7 we went to Batoche and learned about the history of the second Louis Riel rebellion with the Métis against the Northwest Mounted Police. And so I remember standing there as our guide told us about it, being next to the church where we could see the bullet holes, hearing the history of how that person who stood up with those people to fight for their rights was then hanged later as a traitor instead of someone who was fighting for his people. Now, if you're non-Indigenous like me, what are some of your early memories of learning about Indigenous people or of meeting them? If you're Indigenous, what are your early memories of learning about non-Indigenous people? And if you're bicultural, you have both Indigenous and non-Indigenous heritage, or multicultural, what were your early memories of coming to understand the various cultures that formed who you are? Now, not everybody actually even likes the word reconciliation. At the Canadian Unitarian Council annual meeting last year, the Métis educator Aline Laflamme said, "How can we be reconciled when we've never been conciled in the first place?" When I think of the word, I think that I have to reconcile in myself my understanding of the history. I have to reconcile the role that my family played, whether knowingly or unknowingly. I have to come to understand that the process of reconciliation involves hearing the truths and accepting, coming to know them. It means understanding that the injustices that have been perpetrated and continue to be, and support actions that bring justice, that call for change and healing. I have privilege as a white person, the power given to me just because of the family I was born to. What do I do with those access to power? How can I use my voice and influence, educated by Indigenous people, and the responsibility on my own to educate myself and then advocate for change? The words of Justice Murray Sinclair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission: education is what got us here, and education is what will help get us out. I'm fortunate to be co-chair of the Canadian Unitarian Council's Truth, Healing, and Reconciliation Reflection Guide team, an awesome group of people who are working to bring together materials that Indigenous educators and elders have recommended, to put them in a Unitarian context and help us process that together. Because it's not just here. It's here. It's in our bodies coming to know. It's coming to recognize the feelings that arise, and helping us process them so that we can be present to those that need to hear us to hear from them. Liz mentioned that last year I applied to be part of a play creation called Shu'amut, it's the Hunkamenum, part of the Musqueam language group that means home. One way of understanding it is home. David Diamond, the artistic director of Theatre for Living, and the associate director, Renai Morisseau, who's a Cree theatre director and activist, worked with us, a cast of non-Indigenous and Indigenous people, to create the play. We had workshop participants that we worked with for a week, and then we went away and improvised and found a way to bring realities of all our lived experience into a representation of that reality. In the creation of the play, there were three threads. Renai pointed them out to us. She said that three threads in reconciliation, that one is there's a great deal of internal work within the indigenous communities that they are doing so that reconciliation could be real. And they've been doing this work for a long time. There's a great deal of internal work that non-Indigenous communities need to do if reconciliation is going to be true and honorable. And although there are some people who have been doing this work for a while, many Canadians are on the first baby steps. And for those of us who've seen babies recently take their first steps, you know how precarious it is. We're going to fall down. We're going to need to help one another stand up and take the next steps in the journey. And of course, then there's the work between communities, between nations. By threading these three realities together, we created a play. Now, no one was playing themselves. I remembered the clergy person from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission tent. And I said, I'm willing to play a Christian minister. Part of my heritage is the United Church of Canada. I went to Vancouver School of Theology right when they were coming to terms with the things that had happened in the residential school. So I played the character of Sarah. And Sarah and her husband, Doug, had adopted 18 years earlier a boy, a baby boy who was both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, but they were so fearful for various reasons, of losing him, that they did not tell him what they did know about his family. How many people have ever seen a Forum Theater play? A couple of you. Yeah, a handful. So what happens is that it's a short play, about 30 minutes, and it doesn't offer solutions. It shows the crisis after crisis after crisis building to the climax. And then the audience is invited, as we go through the play the second time, to say stop at some point when you recognize the struggle of a character and think you have a way that you could try to see if it could go differently towards true and honorable reconciliation. And you come and you take the role of that character, and the other characters improvise with you, and you see how it goes. And like life, sometimes it goes sideways. And you learn from that. And together you talk about each, what you call an intervention, each time an audience member comes up. And together you get incredible insights. We were lucky to offer that to sold-out houses for 11 performances. And we hope, if we get the support from various foundations and arts councils, to tour it. And I know there's some people that are hoping that we might be able to tour it here. You can talk to Diana if you're interested in hearing more. The learnings, I just want to briefly just name a couple of the learnings that I had. What a humbling experience to know all I don't know. What a humbling experience to be taught by others who know more. I realized that often I can get stuck when, as a white woman, thinking that I know things, and I do know some things. But sometimes then I learn that there are other ways of doing things, or I've offended somebody. You think I would have learned from my conversation with Darla and Shirley earlier, but oh no, I'm still learning. And I found that sometimes I go to that place of guilt and shame, and I find my eyes then turn inward. And I get lost to what's actually happening for the other person. And I've realized that as a non-Indigenous person, a white person, I can be with other people who are like me, who need to process those feelings, so then we can let them go. I didn't run a residential school, so the guilt that may arise in me, I think, is a natural human response to recognizing an injustice. And then I can let the feelings go and advocate for change. there was also something from the characters of Chase, who was born in Canada, her family from the Philippines. Her dear friend is Sia, a young indigenous woman. And the two characters are working against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. Chase really wants to belong. But she can't have what Sia has, which is a knowing and a connection to the land with her indigenous communities. And instead, what Chase needs to do is recognize that the hunger, how many people have felt that hunger to feel connected to this land? How many people have had that sense of really wanting to belong? And so often it would come every night in the play when people would try their interventions that David would then say afterwards as we talked about it, he said, I know that hunger. And Sia and people like Sia can't fill it for me. She has her own things that she is learning about her community and her cultural traditions. But I can be responsible for my hunger. I think I would like to end with a Reconciliation Commission statement, a few words from them. They brought together people from various communities, both Indigenous elders, as well as from people that were from Jewish tradition, people who come from Japanese Canadian and Chinese Canadian and Indo-Canadian, who have all had apologies from the governments, to try and understand how can we move forward in reconciliation. From their conversation together, they invited the rest of us, all of us, to share responsibilities to look after one another and acknowledge the pain and suffering that so many diverse societies have experienced. They say we need to right those wrongs and heal together and create a new future that honors the unique gifts of our children and grandchildren. How do we do this? Through sharing our personal stories, legends, and traditional teaching, we found that we are interconnected through the same mind and spirit. Our traditional teachings, they say, speak to acts such as holding one another up, walking together, balance, healing, and unity. Our stories show how these teachings can heal their pain and restore dignity. We invite you, they say, to search in your own traditions and beliefs and those of your ancestors to find the core values that create a peaceful, harmonious society and a healthy earth. With those ways of being in mind, join us in facing the challenge of healing Canada of its painful past so that we can have a better future for our children. So might it be. Amen.
Amen.
I led us into a time of quiet reflection and meditation. As the choir sang, let the sun rise and the morning come. The light of those who we cannot bring back is buried under the dust. And we can sing a song of peace. I invite you to go to that place in your being to draw from the peace and resilience that is also your heritage. Let us enter a time of silence together. going to do something a little different for our closing today. And when we get to the closing words, you'll understand why. I'd like to invite the Kaldi family up again. And after Liz has said her words, then you can extinguish the chalice. Would be perfect.
The chalice is now extinguished, but its light lives on in the minds and hearts and souls of each one of you. Carry that flame with you as you leave this place and share it with those you know, with those you love, and most especially with those you have yet to meet.
I'm going to invite the choir to come on up. And we're going to, if you're willing to rise in body or in spirit, we're going to join hands. And Liz and I are then going to say the closing words, and then from there we'll sing Carry the Flame. The words are in the order of service. The hand in yours belongs to a person whose heart is sometimes tender, whose skin is sometimes thin, whose eyes sometimes fill with tears, whose laughter is a beautiful sound.
The hand that you hold belongs to a person who is seeking wholeness and knows that you are doing the same. As you leave this sanctuary, may your hearts remain open, may your voices stay strong, and may your hands remain outstretched as we carry the flame.